Your Focus Podcast. Your Focus. Point of information.
Good evening and welcome to Law Focus. My name is Melissa Tindiweni. Of course, I'm not alone. I'm together with my colleague, attorney, Tepo Mohapi, and together we will be your voice of law for the evening right here on VFM 88.1. So we do hope that you will stay tuned with us this evening. It's an incredible day today because 25 years of his life was devoted to the legal profession. And today he finally hung up his boots. And that is, of course, the great legendary Justice Edwin Cameron.
Yeah.
So we're going to just give a brief history of where he was born and his professional career and why it's so important for us to celebrate the life and work that he did in our South African jurisprudence. Yeah,
he's a real giant of our legal system and our jurisprudence. It's sad to see him go, but I mean, everybody has to go at some stage.
He is 66, so at some point he has to retire, right?
Yeah, everybody has
to. He was born in Pretoria in 1953 on the 15th of February. He went to Pretoria Boys High School. He attended Stellenbosch University. He was a very bright spark, don't you think?
Yeah.
He was so smart.
Yeah, he was.
Scholarships here and there. Mm. So he got the Anglo-American Open Scholarship, where he went and he did his BA Law. He then did an honors degree in Latin. And both of these degrees were cum laude. Yeah. And then he went to lecture in Latin and classical studies. I mean, how deep is that? And he went to study at Oxford on a Rhodes Scholarship, again on a scholarship. And then he eventually came back, did his LLB at the University of South Africa, and he was the best law graduate. No doubt he was a very, very, very intelligent man.
So, I mean, he's a well-traveled guy. I'm surprised that he was educated at Stellenbosch. I didn't know that.
I don't know why you're surprised.
I thought he was up here in the old Transvaal region, but yeah, I'm very surprised because Stellenbosch in those days was known as quite a conservative university, and to produce such a forward-thinking individual is for me a surprise.
It must do with his experiences as well.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, as a gay man and
an HIV/AIDS activist and someone who's living with the disease.
Yeah. He practiced from the Johannesburg Bar from 1983 until 1995, and he was basically a human rights lawyer throughout the 80s, and he did very well with our own Witwatersrand Center for Applied Legal Studies, and he had a personal professorship in law as well. He practiced various types of law, and he also defended some freedom fighters in various cases. Sometimes he also defended people who had conscientious objections and so on. His work is really, really, it is extensive, even with the Union of Mine Workers. He's also very well known for his AIDS activism. He's well known that he is HIV positive, and that has been a big sort of fight and in his career that he has fought for the rights of people with HIV.
It must have been difficult for him being able to afford ARVs during that time before they became something that was available to everyone.
Yeah. And watching so many people die. Not have access
and
to
seeing
it,
our president at the time not willing, you know, denying the fact that this is a reality that has, you know, South Africa has to do something about, and the whole TAC campaign. I think that must have been a really difficult time for him as well.
Yeah, it could only have been a very, very difficult time for him. And in 1994, he was also part of the submissions which were made in respect of gay and lesbian peoples when the negotiations were happening. Finally, he was awarded Silk in 1994. That means he was a senior counsel, and he was appointed acting judge of the High Court also in 1994. In 1999, he served a year as acting justice at the Constitutional Court, and then he was at Supreme Court of Appeal, and then he became a justice of the Constitutional Court in 2008, and to this date, he then retires today. And I don't think there can be a more illustrious career and a person who all around has done so well for the judiciary as a whole in this country. And I think a lot of people should read his final comments. We'll tweet them a bit later, but they're very profound. And I think if more people adopted his approach towards the law and their duties towards the legal profession and each other, I think South Africa would actually go much further than it has gone now. So thank you very much, Justice Edwin Cameron. You are appreciated.
Definitely. That is our tribute from Law Focus. And then moving on to the rest of the show, transformation in the judiciary. It's something very important that we are going to talk about. It's going to be a beautiful conversation. We're going to have a wonderful guest whom we're going to basically do a profile interview with as her experience. She shares her experience as a young black woman in the legal fraternity. She is a lawyer. And the reason we need to talk about this is because the African Commission on Human and People's Rights, CGE, that is the Commission for Gender Equality Reports, have consistently shown, unfortunately, that South African judiciary continues to be patriarchal. That is the unfortunate truth about our legal situation in South Africa.
Yeah.
And Section 174, Subsection 2 of our Constitution actually speaks of the fact that there needs to be a deliberate diversity within the South African judiciary. And transformation, if you're in corporate, you know it's not easy to enter into the market. It's no different within the legal fraternity. We all share our own experiences together with the guest's experience. Her name is Bridget Moache. And
I mean, she's a young lady who's come a long way. But being an attorney myself, I would say that the legal profession is one of the least transformed and one of the most conservative professions that you will go find out there. And I'd like, you know, what we want to do is give everybody an idea of what it's like as a young black professional woman living in a society and in a profession that is sometimes great but has its challenges. So we would really like to listen in and to participate in this. Remember that you can participate in the conversation on Twitter at VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus or podcasts, IEINO.FM. And remember, you're tuned into Law Focus on VowFM 88.1. Let's take a look at our legal hotspots, which are the hottest legal stories of the week.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week is Legal Hotspots.
Now, Legal Aid South Africa, the employees have embarked on a strike over many, many employment grievances. The workers are fighting against a number of issues, which include lack of security, employee benefits, and massive budget cuts. Legal Aid South Africa provides legal aid to a large number of South Africans who are unable to afford legal services. Now, if you imagine that legal services are really, really expensive, the work that is done by Legal Aid is extremely important because they provide the bulk of legal services to many people in this country. Now, the national spokesperson, Mr. Shabangu, says the courts will be affected by the strike. However, walk-in clients are still welcome at the legal aid offices all over the country, and they will be assisted. I can personally attest to the fact that in court yesterday and today, we've had this issue where members of the public have been unable to be assisted because they haven't had legal representation through legal aid, and then matters have been postponed, and quite a number of matters happened there. So we're hoping, I really am hoping, that the strike and the strikers as management and management can come to some sort of solution quickly before the situation really clogs up the court system.
Definitely, because we know affording a lawyer is really expensive.
Yeah, no, it's not
Mickey very Mouse, expensive. Yeah. So legal aid is very important. In our next story, the presidential leaks continue in South Africa, and that is pertaining to the CR17 campaign. So in 2017, we know that there was the running for the ANC's new president, and many people were running. Who was running? It was Ramaphosa. It was Mrs. What's her name? Nkosazana Dlamini.
Yeah, yeah.
They were going head to head. And now
those were the two main contenders.
Those were the two main contenders. Yeah. And coming out of the short history that we have leading up to the elections, obviously, was that there were literally two camps within the ANC. There was the Zuma faction and then there was the Ramaphosa faction. Well, he managed to win and he's now the president of the country. But the problem is that only in 2019, we are starting to see transactions that are being made to a lot of different people. Some of them are not even ANC members. Yeah. Some of them are ANC members. Some are paid, are complaining different amounts of monies are being paid to different people. And it's like 2 years after this.
It is really across the board. And it seems to be that a lot of skeletons are sort of coming out. I mean, I know that it's cost one EFF politician.
Two.
Oh, wow. Their job, certainly, because they received money from the campaign. I don't know what the, there were some personal reasons surrounding that, but it will seem as though,
Do you feel sorry for the president, Tebo?
You know, the president is a multimillionaire, hey? Really?
Fortunately, he was a businessman.
Yeah, he was a businessman before. So, I mean, I don't know how sorry I feel for the president. And we can't forget the fact that this has come from perhaps him not being as forthright as he could have been in Parliament. Mm. When he was asked a question, his answer was somewhat lacking, which now kicked in all of these sort of closer examinations.
Maybe Musi's also going to regret asking that question, eh?
I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing what who got what from whom?
Transparency,
from everybody.
Yeah.
From everyone, because it seems as though everybody is just getting money here. And there's no real explanation for why they're getting the money. And some of them, it's more than 24 months after the campaign.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Okay. Now, moving on to somewhat really disturbing news. Three of the so-called Krugersdorp killers were sentenced to multiple life sentences in connection with a series of murders and related crimes. And they were sentenced in the Johannesburg High Court yesterday. The three that were remaining, the other ones, it's a group of them, I can't remember the exact number, but the bulk of them were sentenced, I think it was a month or two ago. And these are the only three that ones that were remaining. They're Cecilia Steyn, Marcel Steyn, and Zach Valentine. They were all found guilty in June of several crimes linked to a murder spree. And the murders took place around Krugersdorp between 2012 and 2016. Now, they're part of a group called Electus Per Deus, which translates to chosen by God. I don't know why odd people love Latin.
Like a cult.
Yeah, no, but they love Latin. Odd people love Latin. You come across a group that has a Latin name.
Lawyers love Latin, can I just say?
No, that's different. Let's not go there. But what they did was this Electus Per Deus group, they eventually murdered 11 people, which include Valentine's wife. And this was in the space of about 4 years. Justice Francis said that the accused had committed very serious and barbaric crime about delivering their verdict. He also added that it was the worst case he'd presided over in a long time. One of the people involved was only 14 years old when it started.
No,
and it's amazing.
Imagine.
And one of the comments that the judge made was that people who were very bright, you know, people who had BCom degrees, highly educated people, high-paying jobs, were actually completely and totally controlled and manipulated by the ringmaster, who was Cecilia Steyn, a woman who hadn't gone past it. Not that being educated makes you clever or not clever or anything, but it's astounding that someone could really wield so much influence over a group of people to the point where one of them arranges for the murder of his own wife. But life sentences have been handed out. Unfortunately, they are, as per custom, they're running concurrently. So in effect, each of them have gotten a life sentence.
What matters is that it's a life sentence.
Yeah.
We'll not see them again in public.
We'll see them. No,
this is South Africa and the law. I'm forgetting. Well, in our final story, it's also another very shocking and painful incident that took place in Vanderbijl Park last week. So, a black mother was pepper sprayed by, this is alleged, am I right? But there is CCTV footage, even though there's problems with the footage.
I mean, you say alleged, but I mean, this is what...
This is really what happened. Yeah, this is for them. So she didn't park her car correctly at the Val Mall, and that really sparked this racial incident where she was asked, "Are you stupid? You idiot?" And they came out and they complained about the way she had parked. And as...
But I think they called her...
The conversation ensued.
Her child a baboon.
Yes, they did.
So and it got to a point where they... She was breastfeeding at the time.
She was breastfeeding her son. They called her son a baboon and they pepper sprayed her after obviously threatening to shoot her. Yeah. That is the latest South African racial incident. You know, they don't learn Abu Adam Katlaelo.
I've almost stopped being surprised at these incidents. I think the only ones that make the news are the ones, you know, that are really, really sort of so brazen. But I think every day people live with this kind of stuff. And the more that we expose it, I think the better off we'll all be. Ultimately, people have been treated with disrespect here. And I hope that this is taken particularly serious. For me, this is assault with intent to do grievous bodily harm, particularly against the child. And that should carry a term of imprisonment, direct imprisonment.
Not. Yeah. What do they usually do? They make them pay fines to some organization because they've got the money and then
The thing that I heard, I mean, this is only reports now in the media, that what the charge is a common assault. I can't imagine that this pepper spraying a mother with a breastfeeding child could be common assault. To my mind, it can't be. It's got to be assault with intent to do grievous bodily harm, specifically against the child. And that carries a term of direct imprisonment when you're found guilty. It should, in fact, not always, but it should carry a term of direct imprisonment. This idea of common assault using pepper spray against an infant just should, it's just not on.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
Well, members of the public who might have seen the incident or who do have information are encouraged to come forward to the police with more details, because they are still trying to locate the woman who did this and her identity.
And or if you are the woman who participated in this thing,
bring yourself forward.
Let's hear from you and hear why it is that you pepper sprayed a child and called the child a baboon.
Well, you are listening to Law Focus with Millicent and Tepo. We are going to be speaking transformation in the South African judiciary. You might have a comment that you want to make, or you have a question that you would like to ask. You may tweet us on @VowFM using the hashtag Law Focus. If you do not have Twitter, ask a friend to help you tweet. It is 1920. We will see you after this.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week is Legal Hotspots.
Okay, my name is Kiara, and I think there has been public awareness to the fact that there needs to be changes with regards to gender, race, and disability, such things in the judiciary, but I think being seen as a lawyer or being part of the job or system, it's still known that there's a gap between men, female, whites, blacks, Indians, coloreds, being that women are getting paid less. They are only choosing like maybe one ethnic woman, even though there's so many, just to show that they're making a change when it's not really a change. It's just trying to please everybody else. And yeah, I think there needs to be much more work put into the judiciary, because people are just doing it for the sake of doing it instead of actually trying to enforce equality.
I believe that there must be more disabled individuals represented in the judiciary, as well as white males, Indian males, and Indian women. In general, I believe that there should be more females.
I think our judiciary represents and reflects our society, and at the top tier, it represents what's going on at the bottom. So we don't live in a well-transformed society. We have issues and an inherently patriarchal society, which then gets reflected at the top. So even in our conversations about transformation, it's mainly around issues of race, but we don't have a strong undercurrent of good feminist and intersectional politics, and that's how we end up having a situation where the transformation is slow. And so I think at the bottom level and at every level of society, we should be working to tackle patriarchy and misogynoir and all the issues that come along with that, and maybe then we'll start to see proper transformation.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Good evening. You're back with us here on Law Focus, and we're discussing transformation, not just actually in the judiciary, but in the legal profession and the experiences, particularly of young black females and black professionals within the legal profession.
And perhaps other marginalized persons.
Yeah, perhaps as well. On the line, we've got Bridget Mwache. I think she used to be Bridget Mwache. I think perhaps the name has changed. Hello, Bridget.
How are you?
I'm okay. It's good to hear from you. I know that the name has changed, hasn't it? We got married recently, didn't we?
Married.
Yes. Makanya. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
I wish you all the best. Unfortunately, I couldn't attend the wedding, you know. The invite must have gotten lost in the... Anyway, let's move away from that. You know, what we wanted to do today was to really ask you about what you think the role of the judiciary, just overall in terms of transformation, is. You know, can the judiciary play a role in transforming South Africa?
First of all, good evening to you both and to your listeners. Thank you for inviting me through. Look, I think the judiciary has a very, very important role to play in transformation. You know, personally, when I was in high school and I was faced with the decision of thinking, what am I going to do when I'm done with my matric? And obviously coming from a very strong female, background at home, I was raised by a single mother along with my grandmother. I knew it was very important for me to continue, you know, the fight of you know, being a strong black woman in our country.
Mm.
And entering into the legal world obviously has its challenges, you know, be it from the necessary funding, getting into the legal field, and then obviously after you've attained your degree, what are the possible, you know, scenarios or what are possible fields that you would like to enter. And I think it's true, and it's a discussion that we should not be afraid to discuss amongst ourselves. It becomes increasingly difficult as a black female to enter into the legal world, and you know, because there's already a stereotype around that.
Yeah.
You know, as a black woman that you face, and I don't think it only affects the legal world. It's generally a corporate a senior in the world where I felt personally that I will go into this field saying to myself, look, I'm young, I'm black, I'm female, there's already a stereotype around me. It seems that I have so much to compete, not only around my, you know, my black female colleagues, but you have to work 110% more because you are coming in with a stereotype to say you will be surpassed, you know, in corporate world by your white counterparts.
Yeah.
You know, you have to,
the perception that you're just there for numbers and BEE,
yes,
and what, but you have to work past that all the time.
Exactly. Sometimes it's there hanging over your head to say, if you do advance, if you happen to advance, is it because of, you know, of them having to satisfy their numbers, or are you actually doing something that is being recognized?
Yeah.
So it's a struggle constantly between yourself personally, and also, you know, as a black woman that wants to advance into the legal world, knowing that you've done it through merit and not necessarily, you know, in numbers.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But, yeah, I went into practice, you know, with that in mind, and
knowing
I think, yeah, knowing exactly what you know I will be up against, and I've made it constantly my mission. Luckily, I had a very good mentor when I started.
Yes,
that,
a very good mentor.
Yes, a very good mentor that, you know, was all about transformation. So it was very easy to not be in this battle alone, because it is a battle that I think is, you know, it's a continuous battle that you will need a lot of strong characters to fight, you know, within, obviously, corporate And also, you know, in our courts, in government, it's everywhere. I think...
Sorry to interrupt you. I just want to take you back a little bit. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to go back just perhaps to two things. Where, you say, well, there's, you know, you're raised by a single mother and the grandmother as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've always wanted to be an attorney, for example. I've never really thought of anything else. But I could always picture other black male attorneys, you see, or
yeah.
a black male judge or an advocate. But I knew of black guys who were in the legal field and they were killing it. For you, did you know of black women? Like, I never met, for instance, a black female magistrate before I became an attorney. I never met a black female who was a judge before I became an attorney.
Yeah.
I knew one or two prosecutors maybe, but that was the extent of it. For you, what was the driver to say, but is there somebody out there who I can look at and be like, because I see now you're a director at quite a significant firm and we're building this thing, I can see. But what gave you that impetus?
Look, going into this, I did not know of a single black female attorney. I will not lie to you. You know, you would obviously read about your black female attorneys, but most of them are in the United States, they are abroad.
Yes.
But I never knew personally of a black female magistrate, judge, attorney. And I thought to myself, well, there you go. Here's your chance. Here's the gap to become one of those people.
Mm.
And I knew that in order for myself to be on the same level as your black male attorneys advocates or even your white male attorneys, advocates, and judges, I had to make sure that I leave a mark and become one of those women that someone would say, okay, I want to study law and I want to become like Bridget Makhana. She is one of, you know, the most successful black female attorneys out there. I did not have that going into the legal field, and I thought to myself, I can actually create that and be sort of like a motivation or an inspiration for someone that, you know, would be coming into the law. So,
Okay.
Yeah. I think your story sounds interesting so far. I think listening to you, I'd like you to unpack more about your life and the challenges that you really experienced getting into this profession from the time you decided, I want to be a lawyer, as someone who wanted to fight whatever you saw as a need to be fought. What were those things? The difficulty of then getting into that institution and having to study and make sure that you pass, because you come from a single woman family and you can't let them down. You know the pressures of being a young black person generally. Please share with us those experiences and challenges.
Yeah, look, it sounds like a typical black child story, but I think it's a bit underrated when you think about it. A lot of people don't appreciate what it is coming from, you know, a single parent home. That is not necessarily, you know, financially stable, so to speak. So already you come into this with a lot of stresses of, okay, I have to now make it. I have to go, I have to actually pass matric with a university entrance. That's number one pressure. And then you go into university and you're like, shucks, I'm studying an LLB degree. I really need to pass. I need to make sure that I have good marks. If I fail, that's it. You know, my mom has raised me. She's basically spent all her money to make sure that I succeed. It becomes so difficult. It became so difficult for me, you know, and it was very difficult. I had to move back home in the middle of my studies because of finances and travel long hours to get to school. But coming from where I come from, and, you know, I was lucky enough to have that character in me to be able to be strong and say to myself, just imagine where you're coming from and just make sure that you're never in a position where you are forced there because you did not actually, you know, take it upon yourself to make sure that you get out of that situation.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need my hand to be held through studying. So I made it my mission to make sure that I studied every chance that I got. Well, lucky for me, I wasn't really much of a an extrovert. So I kept to myself most of the time.
No, so you weren't a party animal there at that.
Well, I tried. Yeah. I tried to
on the streets on the streets of Hatfield there, Tuckers.
I tried to say, look, let's lead a balanced life.
Okay.
Sometimes, you know, if you do too much of something, another thing is going to basically suffer because of that. So ultimately, yeah. You know, I had a goal in mind, and that was to get my LLB degree, and, you know, then came the big hurdle of trying to find articles. And actually, till this day, I tell people that it's actually Tepa Mahaku that actually helped me get my first job. I had given up. I thought... You know, I went interview after interview, and look, I was an average student, not going to lie, and I just, you know, most of these law firms, they would hire 2 years in advance or 3 years in advance, so I was in my last year, I had given up hope. Then a phone call from Temple came and said, dude, just send me your CV.
Aww.
I just send it, and then I'm like, oh, okay, let's see what happens.
Hey, now we're revealing secrets.
No, you must reveal. We need to know how these things work.
So they
must share your story. So this is what I'm doing.
Mm.
So then I send my CV, but, you know, a part of me had kind of like given up and said, okay, let's just think about plan B.
Yeah.
You might not get articles. Think maybe a year of doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to the interview. I said I literally interviewed one time, and then I got the call and said, look, you're in.
Wow.
And that was that. I started at this firm, did my articles there. A year later, I got admitted, and then immediately got promoted. A year later, got promoted again to associate.
Yeah.
Then a year later to associate director. And I was just grinding and grinding and grinding every chance that I got. Because I went into thinking you need to work 150% harder than your white counterpart. Sorry to say that. But I was faced with that every day to say, look, you have a lot to offer because you're brilliant, you're bright. But just remember, you know, reality is exactly as it is. Sometimes it takes a little bit more out of me as a black female attorney to impress and to make sure that I become recognized. So that I made it my life mission. And then ultimately, I decided it's time for me to grow because I was pursuing, you know, becoming partner at age 30. And I made sure that I worked hard enough to create all the necessary network, clientele, and relationships out there. And then I decided to join. I actually got headhunted by the firm that I'm at now, and I joined there as a director. So that's my experience so far.
Okay, Far FM listener, you are in conversation with Millicent and Tepo right here on Law Focus. And tonight we're speaking of transformation within the judiciary. You are hearing the voice of Bridget Makanya. She is an admitted attorney. She's been serving for a couple of years right now. And she's sharing her story on the difficulties, challenges, getting into the legal profession that she experienced and how she overcame them. And she's going to, as she relates her story, you will be obviously getting advice here and there on how you can also manage the struggles if you are interested in studying law or you have studied law and you are trying to penetrate the market or you are in the market and you're trying to climb the step ladder.
Yes.
It's hard. It's hard. And it is now 36 minutes after 7 o'clock, and we will continue the conversation. Remember, at VowFM, using the hashtag LawFocus is how you can get in contact with us for any questions or comments.
Yeah. And Bridget, I know that we like to, in South Africa, we sometimes have a habit of sort of, you know, looking at older white guys as being an impediment to transformation, which is often the case. But in your experience, has that always been the case? I know for myself, I had a principal who was pivotal in A, me becoming an attorney, and then B, me being having the ability or the arrogance would have to start my own practice at a later stage. I think we share an experience there.
Yeah.
And that was an older white guy who I still have a great deal of respect for. So what's your experience of the corporate the corporate area, and what would you say to people, you know, about going into that male white environment, what kind of you know, approach they should they have to it?
Look, Kappa, me and you, I think, had exactly the same experience, and we were lucky enough to have the same principal and mentor. And to me, going in there with the stereotype that I had about, you know, my white counterpart, I was met with a completely different experience, you know, when I was working alongside my principal. And I must say, I was able to be taught and to be motivated enough, regardless of the fact that I am a black female attorney, to become an attorney, to tell myself that I can become a brilliant attorney. And it had nothing to do with color. It had nothing to do with my gender, purely because I was brilliant enough and I was determined enough to actually succeed in the corporate world. So I think it also, in addition to having that self-confidence and that self-esteem, it also played a good role to have someone in your corner who constantly believed in you and constantly empowered you to think of yourself, you know, beyond your color, beyond your race, and purely as an intelligent legal mind.
Yes.
So I
who's,
never
who's delivering a service.
Yeah, I never experienced any negative, you know, backlashes or be it what to speak where I was for the past 3-4 years, because I had, you know, I did not have that. I was quickly that perception that I had about, you know, white males or white females or white people in general and how they are going to perceive me, was quickly erased by, you know, the reception that I received from my principal from day one.
Yeah.
So I was able, my personality also, I think I'd like to say I'm able to adapt and, you know, fit, you know, along with any person. I was able to learn from each and every experience that I got. And yeah, no, the you know, yeah, like you've also carefully said, you know, my principal played a very, 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 very big role, and he continues to do so because our relationship evolved from, you know, a professional one where I can actually literally call him my best friend now, because it's very, very important for someone to, you know, it was important for me to be recognized as a brilliant attorney, purely by name and by the kind of work that I was doing, the kind of service that I was delivering throughout, you know, my years of being there.
Yeah.
We've been speaking and using this word transformation a lot. I still haven't yet heard your definition of this word transformation. We're throwing it around, which is awesome. But I think after we take this short break, can you just quickly just define for us, when you say transformation, what are you talking about?
What would it mean to you?
Law Focus, handing you your rights.
Welcome back to Law Focus with Millicent and Tepo. We are in conversation with Bridget Makanya, and she is sharing her experience as an attorney. Transformation, Miss Bridget, what is transformation?
Yeah. Look, to me, transformation is, I think, in the literal sense. I apply it in the literal sense. You know, having that ability to make this dramatic impact or change, or acting as some sort of a, you know, an agent for change, in whatever form. And you can transform, you know, your workplace, you can transform your surrounding, your environment in various ways. But to me, transformation is being able to take that decision to come into a certain environment with your ideologies and trying to effect a change that is going to be, you know, beneficial to your fellow, you know, to your fellow colleagues or fellow friends or be it whatsoever. So it's very important, and I think not everyone has that character to actually go into a certain environment that is dead set in its ways and go in there with an idea to say, this is my view of what I think should change in the way things are done, or in the way that you think that is going to impact a certain individual. So That's my view. Being able to be strong enough to go into an already set standard and effect that change that is not going to be always pleasant, but that will at the end have a positive effect on people.
I like that definition because then it spearheads my next question for you, which is, I think, it's a big question, but we have to try and smallerize it. transformation obviously does not only speak of progress when you are already in the field. Some of the experiences of just entering into the legal field, you know, because you experienced them, it's really hard. And I'm not sure how much directors and people who recruit us take seriously the factors and reality of South African inequality. And when I say that, I'm speaking of our socioeconomic background that we come from. Now, sometimes you'll come across an advert for a candidate attorney and it will say you need to be bilingual. And by bilingual, they mean English and Afrikaans, not English and isiZulu. No. So that's problem number one. When we know that Afrikaans was fought for as a medium of non-instruction in 1976, but we still have this issue in the legal fraternity when you apply for articles of clerkship. Sometimes you come across an advert that will say only white female candidate or non-EE, right? And class status for me also then seems to be something that is almost as if you have money, it's easier for you to become an attorney or an advocate because you'll have a requirement that says you must have your own license. Sometimes, most of the time nowadays, even your own car. And honestly, when you are a simple, poor, working class black child, you've never earned a salary in your life. Where are you supposed to get a car from? Sometimes where really do you even get a license? Because you don't have the money to go and do that. So there's no empathy with graduates from the people who are hiring. What's your take on that? Speaking of transformation, how do you think that this can be dealt with by people who are recruiting?
Look, that has always been my cry before I even, achieved, the rank that I have, if I can call it that. It's very difficult, I think, for someone that is, high in status and already, in that director partner position to be able to relate to your fresh out of university student. And as much as it's easy to pay lip service and say no, we must take into consideration the backgrounds of your previously disadvantaged or be it whatever. If I can give an example about how I approached things in my previous firm, I was most of the time your interviews, it's normally your directors that sit in there. Nobody gets invited, I'll put invited in inverted commas, to sit in and interview prospective candidates. And again, it came from the type of character that I eventually developed through my mentorship to be able to voice an opinion even when sometimes you're not asked to voice an opinion, but where you think it's necessary for someone to actually realize when they are not necessarily taking the fuller picture of a prospective candidate. So when I was still, an associate at the firm, I would make it my mission to speak to the directors and most of them, to try and make myself a part of certain committees in the firm, be it your HR committees or your BE committees, whatever committees they would like to form, purely on a mission to try and teach my directors, about the realities of how things are there. And I must admit, they are not, and I don't mean this in a bad way, they're not necessarily educated enough about about where we come from and exactly what it took for us to get to where we are, to be able to be sitting in front of them interviewing to become a candidate attorney.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right about that. A lot of them aren't sensitive to the fact or the reality of many black South Africans. What they expect is a young guy who went to Tux or to Boys High, and that's the kind of black guy we want, who is just virtually just like them, but a different shade. And if you're like that, you fit easily. Trust me, I know. You fit very easily into that. But when you're not in that mold, and that's not the mold of most black South Africans, then you don't fit quite as easily. But I think, just to cut you a little bit short there, because we've got some time restrictions, is that it'll only take people like you entering into the profession to be able to sensitize the profession towards that kind of stuff. Even someone like me will not necessarily have the sensitivity.
It's not enough.
Even some will not necessarily have the sensitivities that of the practical reality that is there. You need real people from real backgrounds to do that. Exactly. What I wanted to ask you as well was, how has your experience been with your colleagues or with presiding of, say, magistrates let's say, commissioners in the CCMA or judges or whatever the case may be? In my experience, I get a little bit of pushback as a black guy sometimes, but all I have to do is flex a little bit, growl here and there, bark a bit, and everything's in order again. What's your experience?
Shoot, I've never had to growl.
Fortunately.
I have a constant smile on my face, but I'm very persistent. Okay. Very persistent, but, without having to growl and become very serious about it. Mm. I'm able to, like I said, I thank God for that, being able to quickly read a situation and quickly read a person and their personality and be able to tackle whatever situation that I'm faced with. You will get tons and tons of different personalities everywhere you go, presiding judges, commissioners. But I'm blessed enough to be able to, even through very, very bad circumstances, be able to, sit back, assess the situation, and then think, very quickly also on my feet on how to tackle situations. But I've been able to calmly be persistent enough to be able to persuade people go with what I usually want.
I genuinely envy you. I really envy you in that respect. I envy you. I shout from the rooftops. Really?
Yeah.
I do.
Well, Bridget, you know what? There's also, I don't know, I'm interested in also your opinion about if we had, let's say, more black women, people living with special needs, the LGBTQ people, people who have just acquired citizenship, not born in South Africa. So all the previously marginalized and disadvantaged, if we had more of those people sitting in the benches and within the judiciary space, how different do you think our judgments might be? How different do you think our policies might be? And just the whole sector of law, how different would it be?
Sure, I think it would be very different. I mean, to be able to be sitting with so many different minds and people with so many different types of perspectives on things, I think you will have less and less conservative judgments. You would have more open-minded judgments and more thought out judgments that are more inclusive, I've had a few experiences with judges that are more open-minded. Your judges that are from, like you said, your marginalized judges. And I think they are more, they're more inclusive. They are open to all sorts of possibilities. They're more, it's not a black and white type of scenario with them. And it's so refreshing to be sitting with someone that is actually open enough to consider, all the different views and perspectives that would come with a certain argument, so to speak, as opposed to someone that goes in there with a one-sided view and says, no, this is my view, and this has been the accepted view, and it should continue being the accepted view. I think it'll be a tremendous, tremendous, you know, big and wonderful
contribution
to the judiciary to have, you know, those qualities and characters.
Do you have any sort of advice and or some words of encouragement or warning, whatever you'd like, to young black ladies who are thinking of entering the profession or who are in the profession and disillusioned?
Yeah. Like I said, go in there. You know, I wake up every day knowing that I've worked hard for what I've achieved. There are going to be a lot of people that make you doubt yourself. There are a lot of people that are going to think that you're not brilliant enough because you're young or you're black or you're female. But if you go into this world, this big challenging world that we call the legal world, if you go in there with the mindset of having self-confidence, And having that strong character, it is going to get challenged a lot of times. A lot of people are going to, like I said, make you think that, you know, you're just a number, or you're just a face, or you know, just a pretty face, or you're just, you know, one of the young ones that we have around. But if you go in there knowing that there will be, you know, certain downfalls and certain uphills that you will be constantly faced with, but you tell yourself that whatever it is that gets thrown my way, I'm much bigger than that. It will make a tremendous, you know, it will be tremendous to your career. And don't let people, you know, ever make you think that you will never achieve anything.
Okay.
And if you're able to just be sure of yourself and be confident in yourself, and whatever comes knocking and trying to make you fall, it will not succeed. That's just my motto in life. You know, I told myself that I'm smart, I'm intelligent, I'm beautiful, I'm very, very intelligent. I'll make it, no matter what anybody says.
Definitely.
It sounds cliche, but it counts a lot.
Brown skin girl, you gotta rock. You must rock. You must tell yourself these things. It was so awesome having Bridget Makhanya. Wasn't she fantastic?
Excellent.
Thank you so much for sharing your story.
It's really great.
Thank you, Priya. We appreciate it.
Yeah. And congratulations.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Congratulations on everything.
And all the best.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Right.
Thanks a lot, guys.
That was Bridget Makhanya. She's a director at Paper Incorporated, a young black woman who is a trailblazer in the legal profession.
Doing big things.
Really, all the best.
Did you hear what she said? Don't allow them to basically make you doubt yourself. Don't do that.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. Ultimately, what you're going to face, you will face bigotry. You will face doubts. You will face sexism.
All of the isms.
All of the isms that exist as a black woman, trust me. And even black men will undermine you too. So you are really don't have many allies. No. Ultimately, you must be able to look at the world in the eye and be unflinching when you do so.
Yeah.
Really, you have to take it within your grasp, in your hands. Your future is there, and people will do everything to get in the way. Some people will do everything to get in the way. But go in there. Don't be afraid. You will find people that will help you, even if it's difficult for you. You may not have a car. You may not be bilingual. Do it anyway. It's the only way that the judiciary will ever change.
And as cliche as it sounds, I guess what she did say about having confidence in yourself, telling yourself, I can do it, telling yourself, I am smart, I am beautiful, I am, is important.
It really is, especially as a black woman.
Definitely. Podcasts, Iono.fm, that's where you can catch this interview and all our other interviews if you would like to listen to them again. We spoke to Bridget Makhanya, when we really like to send our gratitude to her once again for being on the show this evening. We hope that you learned and you were encouraged by her experience. Up next is the Total Package with Caesar the MC, DLXL, as well as Celeste King. From our producer, Simba Honde, our technical producer, Kutlwano Sirame, our Law Focus researchers, Sisetu Zingelwa, Nalkama Mate, Sipati Makafani, Tsepo Mohapi and myself, Millicent Ndiweni, thank you for tuning into Law Focus tonight.
Good night.
Law Focus. Point of information.
Law Focus podcast is also available on iTunes. Search Law Focus.